This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Ambassador John Bolton, who served as U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations during the Bush administration. We want to get his thoughts on all the ramifications of the killing of Osama bin Laden, particularly our relationship with Pakistan that's come out of this, what could potentially be ahead for al-Qaeda, and how does this play into all the other upheaval we're seeing in the Middle East. And Mr. Ambassador, it's always great to have you with us.
Well, thanks. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, one of the big questions in all of this, given where bin Laden was found and how close he was to the capital and a military academy in Pakistan, is just how cozy the terrorists are with the Pakistani government. We know there's been problems with their intelligence community for a long time in terms of their loyalty. What, if anything, new do you think we learned as a result of what happened on Sunday?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt, given the size and location of that facility, that it was supported by elements of the Pakistani government. I just don't think there's any other conclusion. And I think, as you suggested, the most likely candidate is what they call ISI, the Inner Services Intelligence Division of the Pakistani military. Now, there may be others as well, and one important question is how high up into the military and civilian government knowledge and support for this operation goes. The military is the dominant force in Pakistan. The civilian government is much less influential, and that's the way it's been for a long time. It leaves us with a very difficult circumstance. I think most Americans are outraged that our supposed ally is double dealing us. On the other hand, this has been Pakistan's behavior for a long, long time, going back to 20, 30 years ago when they were deceiving us on their nuclear weapons program. So I think we've got a lot to be outraged about. Here's the difficulty. They do have nuclear weapons now. They've got a very substantial nuclear arsenal, and it should be one of the U.S.'s highest strategic priorities to make sure those weapons don't go over to terrorists for use around the world, and to make sure that the government of Pakistan itself doesn't get taken over by radical Islamicists. So, you know, you've got a very fine line to walk here between complaining about Pakistani behavior, pressuring them, threatening to cut off foreign aid, and not losing them completely to the dark side. Because if they go over to the side of the terrorists and take their nuclear weapons with them, we've got a real problem.
How important are they to our ongoing mission in Afghanistan? In addition to the nuclear threat, if they were to go over to the other side of this conflict, what assistance do they provide us when they are operating in good faith?
Well, when they do, it's critical to be able to pound al-Qaeda and Taliban on the Pakistani side of the border. You know, really, that border was an artificial line drawn by the British in the 19th century, negotiated in the course of imperial struggles that no longer need concern us, and it splits right through the ethnic Pashtun group that has members on both sides of the border. So this is something that if you could be completely successful in Afghanistan, you would simply push the problem into Pakistan. And the way to prevail over al-Qaeda and Taliban is to squeeze them from both sides of the border. So that's why cooperation, especially from the Pakistani military, is so important, and why so many operations have gone wrong, because they've been leaked to the terrorist by elements in the Pakistani military over the years here.
From your experience as a diplomat, would it be pressure? Would it be incentives to get them to put in lock, stock, and barrel with us? What's the best strategy to try and get them as honest of a broker as possible?
Well, I would try all of the above, because you don't know what's going to work at any given time. And that does require, I think, some assistance to the military. I think we've done an excellent job in bringing Pakistani officers to the United States. You know, we cut them off for a long time because of the nuclear weapons program, and the net result of that was we now know fewer people in the Pakistani military than we might. A lot of this has got to be done behind the scenes. That's very frustrating, too, because because people are, as I say, justifiably outraged by a lot of what's going on here. But keeping our main strategic interest in mind, one, making sure that neither Afghanistan nor Pakistan are used as a base for international terrorism, and number two, making sure those Pakistani nuclear weapons don't fall into the wrong hands. That has to be the objectives that guide us as we alternatively beat up on the Pakistanis in private and cajole them on the other hand.
Let's move to Al-Qaeda now. Obviously, they've lost their official leader. Some say that he hasn't been as involved in operational details in recent years, and so there might not be much of a change with someone like Zawahiri coming in or al-Awlaki there in the Arabian Peninsula. Do you suspect this will shake Al-Qaeda quite a bit, or do you expect them to be pretty much where they were a few days ago?
Well, I think the killing of bin Laden is a huge psychological blow to Al-Qaeda and its allied terrorist groups all around the world. There's no question about it. But I do think most experts have believed for some time that bin Laden has not been operationally in control. So from a day-to-day perspective, I'm not sure it would change very much. And in fact, now that he's gone, there will be a struggle for leadership in elements of Al-Qaeda, and that could change the direction that they take. But a lot of the separate pieces of Al-Qaeda in Yemen, in Somalia, potentially still in Iraq, are viable whatever happens at the top of the organization. Now, this is not some corporate hierarchy we're talking about here. It's much more of a network, powers much more distributed. So I think it was an unequivocal victory to kill bin Laden, but in a way it's sort of asymmetrical. It's more of a victory for the United States because we showed our determination, we showed our capability, and less of a defeat for Al-Qaeda, at least in real operational terms.
Let's move over to the Middle East now, which, of course, has seen its more than fair share of turmoil lately. One of the stories that kind of flew under the radar, I'm sure you followed it quite closely, and that's this apparent agreement, at least in structure, between Hamas and Fatah. And at the very same time, practically, Hamas is one of the few organizations to very publicly condemn the killing of bin Laden, and obviously showing once again a radical streak in their ideology, which should probably come as very little surprise. But given this new partnership on some level with Fatah, what should that indicate to Israel? What should that indicate to the Obama administration about moving forward in any sort of Middle East peace plan?
Well, I think it shows it's almost hopeless. I think Fatah has made a real mistake here. They have allied with a terrorist group. Many people thought that Fatah itself had never really renounced terrorism. You know, they might have put it in the closet for a while, but for public relations purposes, but they never really abandoned it. This is support for that view. Hamas is a real threat, and you absolutely are right in pointing out that they condemned the United States for killing bin Laden. So there is zero chance, I think, Congress will permit any kind of cooperation with this new unified entity. I think Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was exactly right when he said, look, Fatah needs to make a choice here. Do you want to make peace with Hamas, or do you want to make peace with Israel? And so far, Fatah's made the wrong choice. And let's not forget, Hamas is a terrorist group that's a wholly owned subsidiary of the Muslim Brotherhood of Egypt. And as people look at what the post-Mubarak Egypt looks like and want to know whether the Muslim Brotherhood will be moderate or more extreme, look at their manifestation in the form of Hamas. And that tells you a lot about the concerns people have about what comes next in Egypt.
Well, from Egypt north to Israel, north to Syria, and I know you were quoted a few days ago as suggesting that the U.S. could have taken out Bashar Assad a while ago. Elaborate on that for our listeners, if you could, and what is the right posture now towards this regime as it continues to crack down quite brutally on its people?
Well, I think in Syria the stakes are very high because it really is an Iranian satellite, and dislodging that government would be a big setback for Iran if we were able to achieve it. Ironically, the president has done next to nothing. In fact, his administration was still calling Assad a reformer as these demonstrations and as the repression of the demonstrations broke out. So I think there's very little chance the administration will do anything on that score. I think it's a great missed opportunity.
Last question before we let you go, sir. You mentioned Iran. There are some analysts who say now that bin Laden's gone, and maybe this was already true before he was killed, that Iran is, in fact, the largest radical Islam threat in the region. Is that something you would agree with?
I think that's absolutely right, although I think there are other threats that are potentially going to emerge. Let's see what happens in these elections in Egypt. You know, there are elections in Turkey coming up this June, parliamentary elections. Turkey has been steadily drifting toward a more Islamicist government and drifting away from the West, drifting away from Israel. So I think bin Laden's death is a great victory, a great day for America, but nobody ought to be under the impression that this ends the threat of radical jihadism in the coming out of the Middle East.
Mr. Ambassador, always a pleasure to have you, sir. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you again for having me.
Absolutely. Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, now with the American Enterprise Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.